Andy returned to the wagon yard to pick up his belongings and the pack mule. The hostler seemed to be wrestling with a dilemma.
I don't generally poke my nose in other people's business, and I didn't mean to tell you this. But you said it'd be a favor to the lady if you took her husband back to stand trial. Well, maybe this'll help you a little. She asked me how far it is to Colorado City.
Thanks.
Andy paid him a dollar extra and struck off on the road north. His shoulder ached, but he pushed his mount into a lope. He had a lot of miles to make up. Geneva Bannister looked back occasionally, watching for any sign of pursuit. She'd been nagged by a persistent feeling someone was behind her, but she saw nothing. The ranger who kept her under surveillance in Junction had not fooled her for long. She was sure she had shaken him off just as she shook off the Slocums. She didn't intend to let anyone use her to get to her husband. The long trip gave her plenty of time to think about Donnelly. She loved him, or she wouldn't have married him. Over time, however, she found reason to question her choice. Usually, when he left, he didn't tell her where he was going or how long he'd be gone. From the first, he was vague about his business, making her wonder if he had good reason to avoid explanations. When he returned, he usually brought back a string of horses for sale. He always gave her money enough for food and other necessities. She couldn't complain that he was a poor provider, though he would have been a better one if he'd stayed away from the poker tables. She wondered about other things. After the initial honeymoon glow of their marriage, his passion cooled. She didn't believe he was finding pleasure in other women during his travels. In most respects, he had a Puritan sense of right and wrong. Several times she had heard him express disapproval of men who cheated, whether at cards or with women. He had even less respect for women who strayed from the narrow way. She found herself thinking now and then about the rancher, Jess Nathan. He seemed stable, tied to his land and his memories. She wished Donnelly were more like him. The stableman said it would probably take her 3 days to reach Colorado City, 4 if she wanted to be easy on the buggy horse. She decided not to push. It was still a long way to where Donnelly's letter indicated he went. She didn't want the horse to give out. Unlike the night she sought shelter at Nathan's place, the sky was cloudless, offering no hint of rain. As she did most nights on the trail, she pulled off a short distance at dusk and stopped behind a cluster of trees that should hide her from anyone passing by. She fed the horse a bit of grain, then staked him to graze at the end of a long rope. She built a small fire and began to prepare a simple supper. She had finished eating and was sipping coffee when she was startled by the sound of something moving through the grass. Setting the cup down, she fetched her rifle and waited with it back to the buggy. A horseman appeared around the trees and paused, looking first at the dwindling fire, then at her. Fear leaped into his eyes at the sight of the rifle pointed at him.
Ma'am, please don't shoot. I don't mean you no harm.
The rider was black, and he wore an army uniform.
What do you want?
I smelled the smoke of your fire and thought maybe I might find something to eat. I'm powerful hungry.
Her strongest impulse was to drive him away. She was afraid. Yet she could sympathize with his hunger. She kept the rifle trained on him.
I didn't fix much, and I ate it myself. There is some bread I bought in town, and you can fry some bacon.
I'd be mighty obliged, ma'am. My name's Joshua Hamlin. Don't be afeard of me. I'll eat, then be on my way.
He dismounted and dropped the reins. The horse stood still. She kept her distance while the soldier sliced bacon and dropped it into a skillet. She recalled trouble in Santa Angela, but didn't know the particulars beyond the fact that troopers from the fort created a riot of sorts. The town had quieted down by the time she left, soon after daylight. She suspected that this soldier had something to do with the trouble. He was probably running away. The firelight revealed something she hadn't noticed.
You have a stain on your uniform. Is that blood?
He kept his head down, not looking her squarely in the eyes.
I'm afraid so, ma'am. I was in a fight.
Is that your blood or his?
His, ma'am.
She had a sudden hunch.
You've killed a man.
He wasn't no man, hardly. But I expect those folks hunting me.
The soldier looked up. Geneva stepped backward, bumping against the buggy. She gripped the rifle harder.
Don't you come any closer.
He killed one of my men. I know the law wasn't gonna do nothing about it. He needed killing, but I didn't set out to do it. I just figured to cuss him out real good. Then he drawed a gun and I had to protect myself.
Needed killing. That was what Donnelly said about Cletus Slocum.
After I done it, I took out to the east, then cut back north. I reckon I shook him loose because I ain't seen nobody coming up behind me.
That was similar to the tactic she used to throw the Slocums and the Ranger off her trail.
It's likely they've wired every sheriff around here. They'll be watching for that uniform.
I ain't had a chance to swap for something else.
She considered before offering.
I have a few of my husband's clothes in the buggy. See what you can find.
She stepped away, giving him room. Almost immediately, she wondered why she was aiding a fugitive. It was contrary to her normal inclinations. Perhaps it was because his situation seemed similar to Donnelly's. The sergeant took a shirt and a pair of trousers. He was smaller than Donnelly, so they would hang loose on him. Even so, they'd be less conspicuous than the uniform.
Once again, ma'am, I'm obliged.
Just take them and go.
She let the rifle barrel sag a little, but she could raise it again in a second.
You'd better not stay on the trail. They'll be watching it.
I've been hiding during daylight and traveling by night.
Do you have anywhere to go?
Nowhere special. Just someplace a long ways from here.
The sergeant rolled the fresh clothes and tucked them under one arm and mounted his horse.
Is there one more favor I wish you'd do for me, ma'am? If somebody was to ask, you might neglect remembering that you've seen me.
He rode away at a trot and was quickly lost in the dusk. Geneva listened to the hoofbeats until they faded beyond hearing. Only then did she place the rifle back in the buggy. She was still trembling. In girlhood, she heard frightful stories about black men brutalizing white women. She dismissed most of them as exaggerations, a holdover of old anxieties about slave rebellions. The soldier's sudden appearance brought them rushing back, arousing old fears. Yet the man made no threatening move toward her. He seemed as frightened of her as she was of him. He admitted to a killing. If the person he killed was white, the soldier stood a poor chance of living long enough to go to trial. His remaining time was likely to be short, and the end terrible. Despite the fright he gave her, she felt sympathy for him. She was up the next morning before full daylight, moving sluggishly, her eyes itchy from lack of sleep. She had relived the previous evening 100 times, occasionally slipping off into a nightmarish half-sleep, dreaming of a shouting mob placing a rope around the soldier's neck and hanging him from a tree. Only sometimes the victim was not the soldier. He was transformed into Donnelly Bannister. Late in the morning, half a dozen horsemen approached her from the north. As they pulled up beside the buggy, she saw a deputy's badge on one man's shirt. He touched fingers to the brim of his hat as their horses and her buggy came to a halt.
Pardon, ma'am? Well, we're looking for a man.
Geneva hoped nothing in her expression gave her away.
As you can see, sir, I am traveling alone.
We got a wire to be on a lookout for a darky soldier from Fort Concho. Seen anybody like that?
I can't say that I have.
She consoled herself that it was not exactly a lie, just an evasive answer.
There's a good chance he's riding north from Santa Angela. If so, he's probably still south of us. You oughtn't to be traveling alone, ma'am, with a murderer on the loose.
A murderer? Who was killed?
A nobody who called himself Burnsides. We ran him out of our town a while back, but he was white, and a darky shot him down while he was drunk. We can't let a thing like that just go by.
I suppose not.
If you're nervous, ma'am, I'll get one of these men here to ride along with you, just in case.
Thank you, but I have a rifle with me and a pistol. I don't see that I have anything to worry about.
Be on the lookout, then. No telling what a desperate man like that might do. Especially a darky!
The posse continued south on what Geneva knew was a wild goose chase. The lawman indicated the victim was a man of no account. The soldier told her as much, too. She felt better about aiding him in his flight. Perhaps kind strangers had helped Donnelly in the same way. She would like to think so. Donnelly told her of a business acquaintance in Colorado City who owed him money. She needed it for the trip, but lightened the weight of her purse. Moreover, the buggy horse was wearing down from the steady pace all the way up from the junction. A couple of days' rest would be good for the horse as well as for her. The western march of railroad building crews prompted the birth of the town. Almost overnight, it became a busy supply center as well as a cattle shipping point for a broad area of western Texas. Its buildings still looked new, the paint bright. The lumber, left unpainted, still shone fresh. Geneva, in her rig, crossed the railroad tracks and picked out a likely-looking general store and stopped in front. She started to climb down. A well-dressed man stepped up and extended his arms, offering to help her. She took him to be a banker or a lawyer. No one else wore clothes like these. Not many could afford to.
Oh, that's kind of you, sir. Traveling alone, I haven't had much help the last few days.
You've been traveling alone? Madam, has nobody warned you that a black murderer is on the loose? He's being hunted in a dozen counties. Rumor is that he has killed two or three white men and forced himself on a couple of helpless country women.
She found it remarkable how quickly fear could create rumors far worse than the reality.
They made a bad mistake sending those blacks out here to watch over us. It's they who need watching, not us. Anyway, you had better stay here in town till the killer is caught and disposed of.
Disposed of?
It sounded as if he were a mad dog to be dispatched without ceremony and dragged off somewhere for the buzzards to feed upon.
Do you know a man named Luther Fleet?
Fleet? Yes, but I can't imagine what a lady like yourself would want with him.
My husband told me he owes us money.
He owes money to many people. I wouldn't wager a nickel on your chance of collecting. But be that as it may, he lives in a shack south of the railroad tracks. You'll be able to recognize it by a belligerent bulldog he keeps chained at the front to ward off people who might want to do him injury. Those, I must say, are numerous.
The description took her aback. If Fleet were that disreputable, she didn't understand why Donnelly would have done business with him.
What does he do for a living?
That, madam, is a question many have asked. Except for gambling, at which he exhibits some limited skill, he has no visible means of support.
The gentleman tipped his hat.
Well, you have my best wishes.
Thank you, sir.
A little shaken, she contemplated moving on through town without bothering to see Fleet. But she needed supplies to continue her trip. The sergeant almost finished the bacon, and she was short on flour, sugar, and coffee. She was unsure how far it might be to another town if she maintained her northerly direction. In the store, she paid the merchant for the goods she bought, then counted the money that remained from what Donnelly had left for her. It wasn't much. Like it or not, she needed to find Fleet. The balding merchant, who reminded her a little of Addison Giles, loaded her purchases into the buggy.
I assume your husband's waiting for you?
Yes, but farther on.
The merchant frowned as the other man had.
This is not a good time for a lady to travel alone.
You're thinking about the fugitive soldier? The chances are that he's nowhere around.
Then again, he could be watching us this very minute. Were I you, I'd stay in town till he's caught. You can find good accommodations at Mrs. Kelly's boarding house across the street and down yonder way.
I'll consider it. Thank you for your concern.
Geneva knew she couldn't afford to stay in the boarding house unless Fleet paid up. The merchant gave her a hand getting into the buggy. She drove to the corner, turned, and crossed back over the tracks. She followed a dirt street past a couple of busy, low-order saloons, and through what she easily recognized as a small red-light district. 200 yards beyond stood an unpainted shack. Behind it stood a barn built mostly with used lumber and a set of wooden corrals holding several horses. A bulldog waddled out from the shade of a narrow porch and strained against a chain, snarling as if it meant to commit murder. Geneva had to pull hard on the reins to prevent the buggy horse from turning away. She stopped in front of the house, but didn't climb down. She saw no way to reach the front door without passing too close to the dog.
Dog, shut up out there!
The dog did not let up. A pudgy, unshaven man came to the door and stood in his socks, his shirt unbuttoned most of the way down, the tail of it hanging out. Obviously, the commotion awakened him from a nap.
Damn you, dog! I'll take a whip to you if you don't quit that noise!
He turned his attention to Geneva.
Who the hell are you? And what the hell do you want here?
She was tempted to retort, nothing that you have, but she couldn't turn away so abruptly. She needed the money.
I'm Geneva Bannister.
Never heard of no Geneva.
Donnelly Bannister is my husband.
Oh, Donnelly. Well, he ain't here. Ain't been here in a while.
I know. I'm on my way to meet him.
I don't see where that has anything to do with me.
He said you owe him money. I need it.
Who don't? Well, get down and come in. We'll talk about it.
Geneva nodded toward the dog.
Not till you tie him up short.
Hush up, or I'll take a quart to you.
The dog quieted, but watched Geneva with distrust. Fleet wrapped the chain around a post several times, shortening the dog's range of movement.
Now you can get down.
Geneva got down. Fleet did not offer to help her. Though the dog could no longer reach her, she gave it a wide berth. She found the inside of the house as spartan as the outside. Newspapers had been pasted to the walls to serve as a cheap form of wallpaper, the house's only insulation. A half-empty whiskey bottle stood on a plain kitchen table.
Drink?
The thought of drinking with him repulsed her.
No, thank you.
Hope you don't mind if I take one. My stomach goes sour when I get woke up too fast from my nap.
He uncorked the bottle and took two long swallows.
The money, Mr. Fleet.
Oh, yeah, the money. Well, now, that raises something of a problem. I ain't got that much.
Well, how much do you have?
Just enough to start me in a game tonight. There's a couple outfits in town to ship cattle. Their cowboys will be ripe for the picking. I'll pay you in the morning.
I do not intend to spend the night in this town.
I don't see where you got any choice. I said I'll pay you in the morning.
But I'm broke, almost. I can't afford a boarding house.
You can stay here.
Her face warmed.
With you? Not on your life.
Saving it for your husband, are you? Well, you don't need to worry about sharing the bed. I'll be playing poker most of the night. When I come back, I'll sleep in the shed.
Geneva wanted to forget the money and rush out of this house, out of this town. But she couldn't get far with the little money she had left. Fleet took the decision from her hands.
Whatever you want for tonight, you better bring it in now. I'll put your buggy under the shed and throw your horse into a pen with mine.
She brought in two blankets, her purse with the pistol in it, and her rifle.
You figure on hunting bear? I don't think you'll find any in this house.
You never know what kind of animal might come prowling around.
Is that a fact? I'll see to the buggy and horse. I'll be switched off for someone.
She went out to put her buggy in a low shed. She took the pistol from her purse and checked to be sure it was fully loaded. That evening, she cooked supper, never letting herself stray far from the purse. Fleet drank much of the remaining whiskey, his flabby face reddening and his eyes watering. He loosened up and began to talk.
Old Donnelly, he's a good judge of horse flesh. Him and me, we made a right smart sum of money trading together. He knows where to get them for nothing and where to sell them high. And he savvies how to steer clear of the sheriffs, too.
Geneva suspected Donnelly's horse business had a side that would not stand much daylight. But she kept telling herself her imagination was running wild. She tried not to hear everything Fleet was saying.
It's a long ways from Indian territory down to that junction country. Them Indians got more horses than they need since they ain't going out on the warpath anymore. 50 here, 70 there, they don't hardly miss them. And even if they do, the army won't let them off the reservation to try and bring them back.
You're telling me that you and Donnelly steal horses?
Steal is a strong word. After all, how else do you reckon them Indians got a hold of them in the first place?
Fleet gave Geneva a long, lustful study.
I can see why he picked you. He's always had an eye for good-looking horses. Women and horses ain't that much different. There's few things prettier than a slick young mare.
I am not a mare, Mr. Fleet.
But slick and young. I wonder how long it took him to unhook your buttons the first time.
You've said enough, Mr. Fleet. I thought you were going to a poker game tonight. How can he play in that condition?
But by the time he prepared to leave the house, his hands steadied, and he walked a straight line. He flexed his fingers.
Whiskey sharpens me up. You watch, I'll trim those cowboys tonight. I'll take hide, hair, and all.
After he was gone, she checked the front door to see if she could secure it. There was no lock, nor was there a way to bar it. The best she could do was to brace a chair beneath the porcelain doorknob. She did the same for the back door. Geneva was tired, but she couldn't bring herself to lie in his bed. She spread her own blankets on the floor. She lay awake and fully dressed, thinking and listening. Once she heard a couple of men approaching the house. The bulldog's chain snapped loudly as the animal ran to the end of it, giving the passersby a warning.
And that dog's looking for raw meat. This ain't the right house anyhow.
Geneva considered giving up and leaving before Fleet came home. She'd have to go out the back door to avoid the bulldog. She could hitch her horse to the buggy and be a few miles north of here before sunup. But the purse contained little more than the pistol. She took it out for reassurance, knowing she might have to show it to convince Fleet to pay what he owed. She managed finally to fall into a restless half-sleep.
Move aside, dog. I'm coming in.
She heard him push against the door. The chair held for a moment, then slid away and fell over. A match flared. Swaying, Fleet lighted a lamp and held up a handful of bills.
Ha! Told you, by God! I cleaned them boys to a fare thee well.
Geneva rose quickly to her feet, clutching the purse.
You were going to sleep in the shed.
Changed my mind. You've been looking down your nose at me like you was special and I was dirt. Now we'll find out which is the better man, me or Donnelly Bannister.
He lunged toward her as she dropped the purse and brought up the pistol.
No,
he grabbed her with strong arms, pinning her against him, forcing her back. She managed to place the muzzle against his leg as he pushed her onto the bed and fell on top of her.
You bitch! You shot me!
Fleet rolled away, his eyes wide with surprise. Geneva got to her feet and pointed the pistol at his groin.
I'll do it again if you don't leave!
He fell to the floor, gripping his upper leg with both hands.
My God, I'm bleeding to death!
You will if you don't go and find some help!
He dragged himself to the door on hands and knees, leaving a trail of blood. He picked up the chair and used it to support the wounded leg as he dragged himself out onto the porch, then to the ground. Perhaps because of the blood smell, the dog attacked. It dug its teeth into Fleet's leg and clung until it reached the end of the chain. Daylight was 3 or 4 hours away, but for Geneva, the night was over. She grabbed up what belonged to her, including the wad of bills Fleet brought. She didn't take time to count them, for this was no time to quibble over small matters. She hitched her dark horse to the buggy and crossed the tracks at a brisk trot. The business houses were dark, the streets quiet, except for a few cowboys weaving their way toward the shipping pens where their chuck wagons were camped. The moon was dull, but yielded enough light that the trail north was easy enough to see. She doubted that her husband and Luther Fleet would ever trade horses together again. And for a while, at least, Fleet would have little interest in ladies' buttons. Andy grew acquainted with Colorado City during the long days he spent there, being treated for the wound the two stray outlaws inflicted upon him. Geneva Bannister had a long head start, but he traveled faster on horseback than she could in the buggy on the road northwest from Santa Angela. A posse riding south in search of the fugitive soldier told him about meeting a lady traveling alone. He came within sight of her early on the third day and trailed well behind. He shortened the distance as she approached Colorado City. He thought it conceivable, though unlikely, that she might meet her husband here. He watched her stop at a general store and talked briefly with a well-dressed man who definitely was not Bannister. Then she returned to the south side of the railroad tracks and pulled up in front of a plain shack that suggested something less than prosperity. Presently, she unloaded some of her belongings. A man bulkier than Donnelly took her buggy and horse to a shed. Perhaps he was a relative, or at least a family friend. Watching from a distance, Andy realized he had seen him before. His name was Fleet, and his disposition was sour. At the sheriff's suggestion, Andy asked him about Bannister. Perhaps it made sense that Geneva Bannister was paying him a visit, inasmuch as he knew her husband. Confident that she wouldn't travel on for a while, Andy crossed the tracks and rode to the courthouse. The sheriff greeted him with a handshake that could crush walnuts.
Thought you had a gutful of this town already. How's the shoulder?
Hurt near healed. Still aches a little now and again.
Comes from sleeping on the ground too much. You ought to have a decent bed at night.
Hard to manage when you're trailing somebody. Besides, Indians say sleeping on the ground is the healthiest way. They claim that healing powers rise up from Mother Earth.
So, who you after this time?
It's still Donley Bannister. I don't suppose he's been back.
We haven't seen or heard of him. Right now, everybody's hunting for a soldier out of Fort Concho. Killed a man, they say.
So I heard, but my job's to look for Bannister.
Andy told about trailing Bannister's wife up from Junction. He described the shack that he watched her enter. The sheriff's eyebrows lifted.
Sounds like Luther Fleet's place. When Bannister was here, before I found out he was wanted, Fleet and him visited whiskey joints and gambling tables. Fleet played patty cake with the ladies while Bannister just played poker.
Bannister didn't pay attention to the women?
A man can have strict morals about one thing, but not about another.
Andy thought Geneva Bannister would probably be pleased to hear about this side of her husband's character, if she didn't already know.
Tonight, you can sleep on a soft bed over at my house.
Thanks, but I've got to keep an eye on Mrs. Bannister. I almost lost her at Santa Angela on account of the soldier trouble. I don't want a chance losing her again.
You might not get much sleep. Some cow outfits are in town. The only people who get much rest tonight are over in the cemetery.
Sounds like Santa Angela after payday at the fort.
Yeah, you can't blame the boys for cutting loose. They don't often get to the big city.
The town had a long way to go before it could live up to the city part of its name, Andy thought. It was slim pickings compared to San Antonio, Fort Worth, or even Austin. But it must look like cowboy heaven compared to a ranch bunkhouse or lonely line camp. Andy saw no reason to hurry, so he took time to drop in at the boarding house where Dr. Coleman had put him for observation. Mrs. Kelly, the landlady, met him at the door, flour on her hands. She rubbed most of it into an embroidered apron tied around her ample middle, then gave him a brisk hug. Delighted at his recovery, the landlady asked about Bethel and Len Tanner. She told him, in no uncertain terms, that he was going nowhere until she fed him the best supper he'd enjoyed since bidding farewell to his young wife. He didn't object.
A drummer moved out yesterday, so your old room happens to be empty. You'll sleep in a soft bed tonight.
Thank you so much, but I'm on a job and need to keep an eye on someone. Maybe when this job is done, I'll come back here and sleep for a week.
He knew that was unlikely.
Well, be sure and bring Bethel. I declare I don't see how you can keep on going off and leaving that girl behind. There ought to be something better for you than being a ranger.
There is, when I can afford it.
After supper, he rode back across the tracks to be sure Geneva's buggy was still in the shed where Fleet placed it. A little farther on, he found a vacant shack from where he could watch the Fleet house without being obvious. As darkness settled in, he saw Fleet leave the house and stride toward a saloon south of the railroad. Horses were tied in front, indicating that several cowboys were already there. Sidestepping a growling bulldog, Andy peered through a side window into Fleet's house. He saw Geneva block the front and back doors by wedging chairs beneath the doorknobs. Then she spread blankets on the floor. That surprised him, for he could see what appeared to be a perfectly good bed. At least this indicated that she wouldn't be going anywhere tonight. He decided to watch Fleet instead. The man might know Bannister's whereabouts. With enough whiskey in his belly, perhaps he could be induced to share that knowledge. Hopeful that Fleet wouldn't remember him, Andy followed the man to the saloon. He entered, plunging into an invisible wall of noise. Many of the cowboys appeared to have made an early start on the evening. Andy ordered a beer at the bar and watched Fleet seat himself at a poker table, a small roll of bills in his hand. The bartender carried a full bottle and a glass, setting them on the table beside him. Three cowboys approached Fleet.
You won everything I had the last time I was in town. I want a chance to win it back.
Andy thought of a spider welcoming a fly into its web. Fleet smiled cordially.
Welcome, cowboy. Take a seat. All of you take a seat. This is your chance because I'm feeling unlucky tonight.
Andy took his beer to a table in a dark corner, away from the several lamps, and sat down to watch. From time to time, he touched the glass to his lips, but swallowed little. The level of whiskey in Fleet's bottle went down and down. In spite of that, the cowboy's money inexorably moved toward the gambler's side of the table. Andy knew within reason that Fleet was cheating, but at the distance, he couldn't see how he was manipulating the cards. The other players were too deep in their whiskey to realize it. Two men came through the door and paused to look around. Andy recognized the chuckwagon cook and the kid who had brought him to town after his wounding. Andy pulled his hat brim down and lowered his head, but he was too late. They walked toward him.
Howdy, Ranger. Looks like you healed up all right.
Andy made a sign for quiet.
I don't want everybody here to know I'm a ranger. Just call me Andy.
You fixing to arrest somebody? I want to watch you do it.
Cookie nudged the cowboy with his elbow.
Just watching a feller is all.
Andy motioned for the two to sit.
Barkeep, bring them whatever they want.
What about you? You done nursed one beer for 2 hours.
Bring me a fresh one.
When the bartender turned away, Andy poured the remaining warm beer down a knothole in the pine floor. The wagon cook licked his lips.
That's an awful waste.
I need to stay sober.
Cookie turned to the kid.
That goes for you, too. We gotta herd these cowboys back to camp after a while. Otherwise, they'll scatter like a bunch of old Mexico steers.
The kid made no attempt to conceal his curiosity as he stared at Andy.
You ain't giving up on being a ranger, even after getting shot? Next time, you're liable to end up with 6 foot of dirt in your face.
You know, you got no place to talk trying to be a cowboy. If some bad bronc don't stop your brains out, some wild cow will run her horn through your belly and out the tail of your shirt.
The men in Fleet's game dropped out one by one, their money gone.
You told us you felt unlucky. I'd hate to play you when you didn't.
Kid, it's time to haze him toward camp now. All right, boys, let's head back to camp. All right, we got to put some distance between us and this town tomorrow. All right, come on, man. Wake up! There's ham in your bucket!
Gradually, the two managed to shepherd the cowboys out the door. Fleet stuffed a large handful of bills into his pocket and turned to the bartender.
Look out there and be sure they're all gone. I wouldn't want them getting a notion to take it back.
The bartender stepped outside, then back in.
All clear. Looks like you had a good night.
It ain't over yet. I got something even better waiting at the house.
Anybody I know?
Nah, she holds her nose too high for the likes of me and you. But I'll bring her down off of her high horse.
An ugly picture flashed in Andy's mind, sparking anger. Whatever she was or was not, Geneva did not deserve this.
I can't stop him.
He knew that to intervene would tip his hand. She would know at once why he was here. Still, he couldn't simply stand back while Fleet carried out his intentions. He would do whatever he had to. The bartender glared at him as he stood up and walked out the door. Andy had occupied space for perhaps 3 hours without adding enough to the till to pay rent on the table. Andy trailed 50 yards behind the staggering Fleet.
Move aside, dog. I'm coming in.
Fleet stomped up onto the porch and pushed against the door. He resisted until he put his shoulder to it and forced it to give way.
Ha! Told you, by God. I cleaned them boys to a fairly well.
You were going to sleep in the shed.
Changed my mind. You've been looking down your nose at me like you was special and I was dirt. Now we'll find out which is the better man, me or Donnelly Bannister.
Andy pulled his pistol and raced for the door, but pulled up short.
You bitch! You shot me!
I'll do it again if you don't leave!
Andy heard Fleet fall to the floor.
My God, I'm bleeding to death!
You will if you don't go and find some help!
Andy realized that he need not show himself to Geneva after all. He flattened himself against the side of the house as Geneva slammed the door behind Fleet. The gambler stumbled across the narrow porch and down to the ground, trying to support himself with a chair. The bulldog attacked him. Andy could only guess how badly the man was hurt. Fleet turned loose of the chair and began dragging himself on hands and knees. Andy had come to help Geneva, but now he needed to help Fleet instead. He took the man's left arm over his shoulder.
I see a light in that house yonder. Maybe they can give you some help or send for it.
He helped Fleet onto the small porch and hammered his fist against the door.
Somebody! Got a hurt man out here.
Through the door's oval glass, he saw the bobbing of a lamp being carried from somewhere in the back of the house. An angry-eyed woman in a low-cut nightgown opened the door and shoved the lamp into Andy's face.
Ugh. We're closed for the night. Go somewhere and sleep it off.
She was in her 30s, Andy guessed, with a hard mouth and too much color in her cheeks.
This man's been shot.
Ugh. Luther Fleet. Can't say I'm surprised. But what did you bring him here for? Look at him, bleeding all over my clean porch.
And have to die here if we don't get it stopped.
Oh, I'll wait till I get an old blanket. I don't want blood all over the living room floor.
Grit your teeth, Fleet. Looks like the milk of human kindness has turned to clabber.
The woman brought a blanket, doubled it, and spread it on the floor.
Lay him over there.
Andy saw that the wound was in Fleet's leg, a long way from his heart. It could be dangerous, however. He could bleed to death, or he might even die from shock. Andy told himself he should muster some sympathy, but he regretted only that Geneva hadn't shot him a lot higher up.
Bring me some clean rags if you got them. Towels would be better.
The bleeding slowed under the pressure of Andy's hands and the towels.
Fleet, I ought not to help you at all. I want you to tell me about Donnelly Bannister.
Fleet's face twisted in pain.
Donnelly, who? Don't know no Donnelly.
Andy squeezed the wounded leg.
Think a little harder. Maybe it'll come to you.
Fleet trembled, cold sweat glistening in his face.
For what you tried to do to that woman, I ought to let you lay here and die.
Oh, God, no. You got to help me.
Only if you help me. Where can I find Donnelly Bannister?
I don't know, honest to God. All I know is that she's on her way to see him. Somewhere's north, where he gets his horses. That's all she told me.
A man emerged from a back room, tucking his shirt tail in. He was buckling his belt as he sneaked out the back door. An overweight young woman with tousled hair appeared from the same room, trying to close a flimsy housecoat. Wide-eyed, she bent over the bleeding man, then rushed out the front door to the porch.
Flora, when you can straighten up, get some clothes on and go bring Dr. Coleman. I don't want this man to die here. He'd give the place a bad name.
Andy wondered what kind of a name it already had.
How come I get the notion that you're some sort of law?
You're right, I'm a ranger.
You must not be much of a shot hitting him in the leg.
Andy saw no reason to tell her the truth.
I don't get to practice as much as I ought to.
The doctor came and looked at Andy in surprise.
Well, Ranger, I wouldn't expect to find you in a place like this. How's the shoulder?
Not better than this man's leg.
The doctor knelt, setting his black bag on the floor.
Ah, Luther Fleet. I wondered when somebody was going to catch you drawing the wrong card.
She tried to kill me! Please don't let me die!
Yeah, well, I'll do all I can. I know several people who would like to have a chance at you. I wouldn't want to deprive them of that pleasure.
Doc, I want you to get him out of here.
If I'm not mistaken, Fleet lives in that shack just down the road.
Him and that mean bulldog. A bullet in the brisket would be good for both of them.
Ranger, let's carry him out to my rig and take him home.
Andy had managed all the way from Junction to prevent Geneva seeing him.
What about the boarding house where somebody can look after him?
This is one customer Mrs. Kelly would not make welcome. I don't wish to arouse her anger as well.
Andy beckoned the doctor out onto the porch.
Doc, I can help lift him into your rig and help get him down, but I can't let Mrs. Bannister see me.
Doc Coleman nodded his understanding.
Being a ranger puts you into some unsavory situations, doesn't it?
When you're tailing a criminal, you don't look for him in the church house.
With both Andy and the doctor supporting him, Fleet whimpered all the way from the doctor's buggy to his porch.
Damned woman, I owe her for this.
That's one debt you'd better forget about. Next time she's liable to shoot you in the heart.
That would require a good shot, for it would be a small target indeed.
The bulldog threatened, but backed away. On the porch, Andy freed Fleet's arm.
He's yours, Doc.
I can handle him the rest of the way.
He pushed the door open and helped Fleet inside. Andy backed away into the darkness. Coleman returned to the porch.
You were worried for no cause. There's no woman here.
Damn. Andy hurried into the shack for a quick look and came back out.
She didn't waste much time getting away.
I had $300 on the table. Rob me, she did.
Like you robbed those cowboys tonight?
Damn that woman! If I ever run into her again, she'll be sorry she ever saw me.
I'm sure she already is.
A partial moon showed him the way to the shed. He wasn't surprised that Geneva's horse and buggy were gone. He retrieved his horse and pack mule from where he left them staked. As he rode by Fleet's house, the doctor hailed him from the porch.
You're a peace officer. It's your place to give the sheriff a full report.
I need to follow Mrs. Bannister.
You won't be able to pick up buggy tracks in the dark.
I guess you're right.
If he started now, in the dark, he might indeed take the wrong road, for several wagon trails led out of town in a more or less northerly direction. If he waited, other buggies or wagons might leave similar tracks. He would be unable to tell them apart. Still, protocol had to be considered.
He would report to the sheriff, hoping he could find the right trail afterward. He seated himself on the courthouse steps. There, fatigue caught up to him, and he fell asleep. He awakened to find the sun was up, and he went to the restaurant to eat breakfast, watching through the window for the lawman to appear. The sheriff arrived at his office after 8 o'clock. Andy told him what had happened.
She shot him in self-defense. I was fixing to go in there and stop him, but she beat me to it.
Andy laboriously scribbled a message on a sheet of paper.
Be much obliged if you'd wire this to Fort McCavitt. They'll want to know where I'm at and where I'm headed.
I'll take care of it.
Hope Sergeant Riker sends word to Bethel. I'd write her a letter, but God knows when she'd get it, or if.
Andy had rather dig a ditch than write a letter. Even to compose a brief message to headquarters was as slow as molasses in January.
How much farther do you think you'll have to go?
I've got my orders. I'll go wherever it takes.
In her rush to get away from Fleet's house and escape the town, Geneva had no time to reflect on what she had done or give way to anxiety. When the town was behind her, however, the pent-up fear and anger burst loose in a torrent of emotion. Stopping the horse, she shook uncontrollably, a rush of tears burning her eyes. Geneva leaned out over the side of the buggy. She covered her face with her hands and cried as she had not cried in years. She vented her hatred of the man who had tried to attack her, then yielded to a suppressed resentment against Donnelly. Because of him, she was forced to endure this long, sometimes frightening trip alone. Because of him, she felt vulnerable to the likes of Luther Fleet. Now, for all she knew, she would be regarded as a fugitive from the law, just as her husband was. She couldn't be sure Fleet would survive the loss of blood. She became aware of a lighted lantern coming toward her, bobbing in rhythm with footsteps. Instinctively, she reached for the rifle. The lantern stopped moving. Its yellowish light showed her a man with a derby hat and a paunch.
You all right, ma'am?
I'm fine.
I heard you cry out. Thought you might be hurt.
She couldn't see past him in the darkness.
Where did you come from?
A chuck wagon camp right over yonder. I'm the cook. I'm about to start fixing breakfast.
Up early, aren't you?
Well, the cook always gets up early. Fact is, though, I just got back to camp an hour ago. I had to herd a bunch of cowboys in from town. Wasn't much point in going to bed, so I didn't.
I'm sorry I disturbed you. I'll be moving on.
You're out awful early yourself, ma'am. Seems to me you might be in some kind of trouble. Anything I can do for you?
She found his voice to be kindly, but she didn't know if she could trust him. After tonight's experience, it might not be easy for a while to trust any man.
It's my own problem. I'll work it out.
Anyway, you look like you've been through a bad time. You know, a cup of good, strong coffee might make you feel better. I'll be fixing breakfast for long.
The thought was tempting. Coffee might give her strength.
You're very kind.
Come on now, swing that buggy off the trail and follow me. It's just a little ways.
She saw the glow of a campfire casting a soft light on a wagon with a chuck box attached.
Hey, better stop here. You wouldn't want to run over any sleeping cowboys. Oh, there was a time tonight that I would have been tickled to do it myself.
He helped her down from the buggy. He removed a wash pan from a three-legged stool and motioned for her to sit.
Hope you don't mind drinking out of a tin cup. I did wash them all clean last night. Some of these cowboys don't care about such things, but I do.
He grabbed the coffee pot by the fire and poured her a cup.
Oh, anything's fine. Oh.
She blew on the cup to cool it. Her hands trembled.
I ain't prying. You don't have to tell me your troubles you don't want to, but, you know, sometimes it's good to talk about what bothers you. Let somebody else help you carry the load.
I shot a man tonight.
Kill him?
I don't think so, but I should have. I just hit him in the leg.
Well, I expect he had it coming. Who is he?
His name is Luther Fleet.
She saw recognition in the arch of the cook's eyebrow.
Oh, I know him. Gambler. Thief. In bad need of a neck stretching. You sure you didn't kill him?
He dragged himself away from there, squealing like a pig caught under a fence. He tried to...
The cook seemed to sense the rest of it.
Yeah, well, you should have stayed and told the sheriff. He'd have found a way to finish where you left off and make it look like Fleet started the fight.
There's a good reason I didn't want to see the sheriff. I'm on my way to join my husband, and there are people who would like to know where he is. And they tried for a while to trail me.
You sure they're still not behind you?
I've watched, but I've seen no sign.
Your husband got a name?
Donnelly Bannister.
Oh, yeah, I remember him. He came by our camp some time ago. Went on, then came back and left a wounded ranger with us.
He shot a ranger?
No. He said somebody else done it. He just happened to be there. Like as not, he saved the ranger's life. Not everybody would have done it in his situation. We gathered that he's on the dodge.
Geneva pondered the irony. Donnelly saved a ranger, yet other rangers were looking for him. Life could be hard to figure.
Now you'll feel better after a good breakfast. I'll get it started.
Geneva was concerned about letting more people see her.
Oh, I'd best be on my way.
Don't you worry about any of these boys talking. Most of them will be so hungover they won't remember you was here. And the rest, well, they know I'd bend a pothook over their heads if they told anybody which way you went.
Geneva looked toward the eastern sky. She saw no sign yet of sunrise.
Well, just a quick bite and then I'll be gone.
The cook busied himself with getting breakfast, greasing two Dutch ovens, molding balls of dough, fitting them into place. He heated gobs of lard in a deep iron skillet and dropped in strips of steak rolled in flour.
It don't vary much from day to day, but neither does cow work.
He frowned and thought.
Some of these boys have got a powerful grudge against Luther Fleet for cheating them at cards. Patting what he done to you? And I think the wagon boss would allow time today to pay the gentleman a visit.
Geneva was not prepared for that.
Well, surely you wouldn't lynch him.
Oh, nothing that drastic. We just tickle him with the business end of a quirt and convince him there's taller cotton someplace else.
She could see rough justice in the suggestion.
I wouldn't want you winding up in jail.
Well, the sheriff would do this himself if the law didn't hold him back.
The cowboys were slow about emerging from their bedrolls. Geneva finished her breakfast before most got their feet under them.
I'm obliged for the breakfast and the comforting words.
The cook gave her a lift into the buggy.
Well, it's a pleasure, ma'am. And don't you worry about any of us talking out of school. We never saw nor heard of you.
First daylight was beginning to break in the east as she left the camp and took the trail north. Some of her faith in men had been restored. Andy was still in the sheriff's office when the woman he met last night rushed in.
Sheriff, you better get yourself down to Luther Fleet's house. The way he's hollering, they must be killing him.
Who?
A bunch of cowboys. Must be 7 or 8.
Did you actually see them doing anything to him?
No, but I heard him squalling like a baby.
Winking at Andy, the sheriff lit a cigar.
Well, reckon we ought to go down there and do something about it.
As soon as I finish my coffee.
Andy refilled his cup from a pot on the lawman's round-bellied wood heater.
He cleaned out a bunch of the boys' pockets last night. They probably sobered up and realized he cheated them.
We'll need to go down there after a while and talk to them. More coffee?
I just got a full cup.
The madam stared at them in exasperation.
I risk life and limb running up here to tell you, and you're not even gonna do anything?
We'll get around to it.
Well, I've done my part. They can hang his hide on the barn door for all I care. And yours, too.
I reckon we better get down there before the boys carry things too far. I'd hate to have to feed them all at the county's expense.
Andy was concerned about the time he was losing here while Geneva was on the move, but he feared the sheriff might need help. They rode together in the sheriff's buggy across the tracks, then west along a well-beaten trail past the house where Andy took Fleet after Geneva shot him. Half a dozen horses stood around Fleet's shack. Several cowboys came out and caught up their mounts. Andy saw a derby hat and recognized the wagon cook among them. Cookie headed off any potentially incriminating questions.
Howdy, Sheriff. Hey, you better go see about Luther Fleet. It looks like he done something to himself.
Like what?
Well,
Best we can tell, he was whipping himself with a quirt like them penitentes over in New Mexico.
Is he dead?
Nah, he's still breathing. Keep saying something about God. Is it all right with you if we ride on? We need to get back on the job before the boss fires us.
Y'all go ahead. Me and the ranger can take care of it from here.
Mucho's gracias. Bad enough him cheating the boys, but it was a lot worse what he tried to do to that woman.
What woman?
That's one we heard talk about.
The cowboys rode away.
The only way they could have heard about it was from Mrs. Bannister herself. She must have gone by their camp.
It's north of town, just a little ways out.
Andy nodded with satisfaction.
Then I ought not to have much trouble picking up her trail.
The cowboys had shortened the leash so that the bulldog could do nothing more than threaten. Entering the shack, Andy and the sheriff found Fleet sitting on the edge of his bed. His shirt was off, his long underwear pulled down to his waist. He looked up, bleary-eyed, having trouble focusing on them.
Oh, for God's sake, don't whip me no more!
It's me, and a ranger. We came to see if you're still alive.
Not by much.
Fleet's back and shoulders were raw, laced with quirt cuts long and deep, seeping blood.
You thinking about filing charges?
If I did, I doubt I'd live to testify.
Probably not. Seems to me that you've worn out any welcome you ever had here. Was I you? I'd hunt for a place where the water runs free and the sun always shines. Somewhere a long way from this town.
As soon as I heal up enough to travel, between getting shot and then being worked over with a quirt, I'm getting damn tired of this place.
You ever come here again, you better just be passing through on a train, and you better not get off.
Fleet hunched his shoulders and grimaced in pain.
I can't think of nothing that would bring me back. You got to give me time to sell out.
I'll give you till Saturday. If you can't ride a horse by then, you can buy a ticket on the train.
You're a hard man. Even for a sheriff.
If I was a hard man, I wouldn't have waited for a woman to shoot you. I'd have done it myself.
Andy and the sheriff rode the buggy back to the courthouse.
I hope you won't do anything to the cowboys.
Why should I? They said he courted himself. It'd be his word against theirs. Justice don't always move in a straight line, but it generally finds its way. I might have a chat with their trail boss. Just let them pass on the word not to think they can whoop up on anybody anytime they get their nose out of joint.
Sheriff. I like the way you think.
I don't see any other way of thinking. What's right is right. And sometimes what's wrong is right, too.
Riding north, Andy found the cowboys breaking camp. The cook and the kid were loading pots and Dutch ovens into the wagon behind the chuck box. Andy pulled up alongside the wagon.
We'd offer you coffee, Ranger, but we just poured out what was left.
Much obliged all the same, but I need to move on. I don't suppose you'd tell me if you've seen a woman pass this way in a buggy.
The cook looked Andy squarely in the eyes.
Well, I don't suppose we would.
Andy nodded. He took that answer to be as good as if the cook had said yes.
Don't work too hard.
Andy had no trouble finding and following the narrow tracks of the buggy. The trail led him close to the dugout where he got shot, but he had no interest in seeing that place again. He passed it by. So far as he could remember, it was a long way north to a town of any consequence. From here on, for several days, he would see little but a thin scattering of ranches, established in the wake of the buffalo slaughter. There had been some hide camps in the past, but those would be gone now. Instead of gathering buffalo hides, men with no better work to do were gathering buffalo bones to be shipped to Europe for the making of bone china. Remembering the great shaggy herds he saw as a boy, living among the Comanches who captured him, he gave way to a fleeting melancholy for so much lost. At times, the wagon road threatened to disappear, and with it, traces of the buggy. It was easy to imagine how the land looked before, for it had changed but little. Cattle grazed now where the buffalo had been, but the landscape remained as he remembered it from boyhood. Crisscrossed by narrow old trails beaten out by cloven hooves over uncounted generations. The Indians survived here on what nature provided, little affected by distant events. The white man, living with and for his cattle, depended upon distant markets and took his chances upon prices set by others, hundreds and even thousands of miles away. Andy had the feeling he could even yet throw off most trappings of the white man's civilization and still survive. That wouldn't happen, however.
For Bethel's sake, he had taken on responsibilities that would forever limit his personal choices. He might at times mourn the trading of complete freedom for a shared life, but he had resigned himself to it. He had chosen his path and could no longer change it. He caught a hint of wood smoke. It was so quickly gone that he thought at first he'd imagined it. When it came again, it was stronger. Somewhere off the trail, a campfire burned. His immediate thought was that he had overtaken Geneva Bannister. He reined up, his gaze carefully searching for the source of the smoke. At length he found it, ahead and off to the right. So far, her buggy tracks had not left the wagon trail. This must be someone else, for a couple of traveling hours remained in the day. She had not been in the habit of stopping early. Warily, remembering the incident in the dugout, he checked his rifle, then his pistol. And he moved on, keeping to the lower ground of the rolling terrain, hoping to see before being seen. He was surprised by the sudden appearance of a man on horseback. The two startled riders reined up. Andy recognized him as Comanche and raised his hand. The Indian lifted a rifle, then lowered it part way. Andy had had little occasion to use Plains sign language in recent years, but what he needed came back to him. He indicated that he meant no harm and asked permission to come into camp. The surprised Indian hesitated, then signaled a reluctant welcome without lowering the rifle further. Approaching him, Andy reached back into memory for half-forgotten words. They came haltingly.
I am a traveler, like yourself.
The Indian wore no war paint. Andy guessed he was a member of a small hunting party off the reservation in violation of federal rules. Small groups now and then returned to old hunting grounds despite government prohibitions. Such forays were hazardous. Any whites they encountered were likely to assume they had hostile intentions and shoot them on sight. The Indian's eyes narrowed in distrust.
How is it that you speak like one of us? You are Tejano.
I was raised among the people. The Tejanos took me away from them.
Did Father Washington send you to force us back?
I'm with the government of Texas, not of Washington. I did not know you were here.
This was our land. The Tejanos took it from us.
I know.
Andy also knew that the Comanches took it from the Apaches. He didn't know who the Apaches took it from.
You are in danger here if anyone sees you.
But there is hunger where the government wants us to live. We came here to find buffalo. All we find is bones.
The buffalo are gone.
Surely not all of them. There were so many.
I have not seen one in years. I'm sorry, Uncle, but they are truly gone. Only their bones are left.
Andy saw sorrow in the man's face and felt sorrow of his own.
I am tired of searching. You are welcome to come with me to camp.
It would give me pleasure.
Even though he had been taken from his real parents by force as a child, Andy had never forgotten the contentment he had found in his brief boyhood years with the people. He felt a yearning to be in that company again, at least for a few hours. Wherever Geneva was, she would soon be stopping for the night. He could find her tomorrow.